Arizona's afternoon news with Mac and Gatos. The Big Four at Four.
Big Four at Four.
Four at Four.
Four at Four. Big and blockbuster stories that you need to hear.
Big Story One.
A successful selection Sunday for Arizona State University. The school will face off against fellow number 11 seed St. John's in a first four game on Wednesday in Dayton, Ohio. The winner of that game will face number 6 Buffalo in the second round. This is the second year in a row that ASU gets to compete at March Madness. The last time Sun Devil Hoops earned back-to-back trips was in 1980 and 1981. Julie Levin, KTAR News.
Monica, you heard who just read that report right there, right?
She sounded like she was not excited at all.
Well, you know, it's Julie Levin who used to do the news for us on the weekend during the agenda.
She was way too calm during that.
Do you know where she went to college?
Let me guess.
She's going to say U of A.
Well, that would explain
it
right
there. Are
they
in March Madness?
Nope.
ASU is.
And guess
go
where,
Devils!
Guess where Joe went.
I'm just going to say that maybe I should do the read for that story next time.
I think so.
You know what it would sound like?
What?
Sun Devils! Woo!
Wait a minute. Yeah, I did woohoo before, and you told me we weren't allowed to do woohoos.
No, it wasn't. It was just a woo. There was no woo on it.
So ASU is selected as the number 11 seed, which you think is great, awesome, yeah, woohoo, right? Well... They're actually one that has to play in a play-in game. You know, one of those games that doesn't really matter, but it does matter, but not really, but kind of.
It's like you're waitlisted to make it to the actual dance.
Very true.
You could get in, but you're not, you know, really hot. You're just lukewarm.
So they're going to play St. John's, and that's Wednesday night in Dayton, Ohio. Hopefully, fingers crossed, ASU will do better than it did last year.
Yeah, last year they lost to Syracuse in the play-in game as well.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully the experience of the play-in game in Dayton, ASU really has their act together now, and they are ready to push forward to, I think they technically call it the second round, even though to everybody else it's really the first round.
No, these are play-in games, and then there's the first round.
But I think they technically call the play-in games the first round.
No, that's like the half round.
I know.
You can't mess with tradition.
I'm with you on that.
So who do you think's going to take all the big dance?
Oh, the
whole winner.
Thing?
Yeah.
I can't tell you that.
You don't know yet?
No.
Come on.
No. I can't spill my secrets. I finished first a couple years ago. I finished second last year. I think third the year before that.
Mm-hmm.
No. When you get on the podium, you can't just be spilling your secrets all over.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Since you asked me just now, I'm going to say, you know what? I think you should have the Sun Devils going the whole way.
There will be some people that will have the
Love
Sun
it.
Devils going the whole way.
And
they'll drop out quick, meaning not ASU, but the person who chooses them to go all the way.
And I think the Sun Devils will win the play-in game. And I think they have a decent shot against Buffalo. But
Number six seed.
To pick them to go any further than that.
It's going to be a little tough.
Yeah, they're going to need to go on a special sort of run to get further than that.
And it could happen. We have seen it before.
Oh, yeah. I mean, last year, Loyola Chicago, I think they were a six seed.
There was some team,
Were they like an 11? I think they were an 11. And they went all the way to the Final Four.
Yeah, but there was another team that we had never heard of. Was it Duke that got beat last year? Was it the year before?
How about last year? UMBC.
Yeah, that's
Virginia,
who I'm talking about.
16
yeah,
seed.
There we go.
University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
That's right. Let me tell you, March Madness is so fun anyway, and now that we have ASU in it, you know, Arizona school, it's going to make it even more exciting.
This is the Big Four at Four.
The Big Four at Four. Big Story 2.
This video made international headlines. A woman hit and killed by a self-driving Uber car. It caused Uber to stop testing its self-driving tech in Arizona and for people to question the safety of those cars.
Was this a year ago today?
Can you believe that?
I thought this happened in the summer.
So this happened in Tempe a year ago today. Remember the Uber? It was a self-driving car. Although there was a driver in the driver's seat,
mm-hmm.
they was not driving, were watching The Voice, right? They're watching The Voice on the phone, so they weren't paying attention. The car collides with a pedestrian who was walking her bicycle, I believe, across the road, and she was killed. And since then, we've had lawsuits, we've had possible criminal actions, we had Governor Doug Ducey coming out and stating that we can charge corporations and companies with a criminal action. We had, I think it was Coconino County Attorney's Office coming out and saying that they will not press charges against Uber for the crash. A lot has happened with this story.
But when you talk about who's really to blame here, to me, it doesn't solely fall on one person. The, you know, air quotes, person behind the wheel in that story. I mean, the car was a self-driving vehicle. But to me, there the blame is spread around. It's put on the person who was crossing the road. Granted, it wasn't the middle of the night, and supposedly
it was still dark.
It wasn't as dark out as that video makes you think, but it was dark out.
It was still dark out.
And that person was not crossing at the crosswalk. What was her name? Elaine Herzberg, the woman who unfortunately lost her life. So I would place some blame on her. I would place some blame on the person behind the wheel who was watching The Voice. And I would place some blame on Uber as well, who had disabled a braking system in the car, reportedly because, like, if a bird would fly in front of the cars, they would suddenly brake. And it would be a very jarring experience. So they disabled that. And there's still not word on if the drivers knew that or not, that that system had been disabled. But if this is Uber's fleet of vehicles and they say, hey, we just want you in the car to kind of be quality control, some blame should lie with Uber as well.
Well, let's not forget, you can also possibly put some blame against Tempe as well, because where this woman was crossing the road, it appeared that it would be a logical place to cross with the way that Tempe had designed the median in that particular area of the road. So there's a lawsuit going on with that right now. And then it wasn't Uber that created this technology. It was Waymo that created the technology. So to me, it sounds like it was a perfect storm to create a tragedy. And I think that's what we've learned over the past year.
You're listening to the Big Four at Four. Let's recap. Story number one, the Sun Devils going dancing for the second year in a row. And you just heard it. Story two, 1 year anniversary of the self-driving Uber crash. Going to be interesting to see how that story continues to play out the rest of this year. Story three and four still coming up. A woman faked cancer to get an abortion. Monica and I are going to talk about that next.
The Big Four at Four. Big Story three.
Shalice Zeitner made international headlines last year after being accused of faking cancer in order to get the state to pay for her late-term abortion. Now, prosecutors said that Zeitner gave falsified medical records to support her claim that she had cancer and that her pregnancy put her life in danger. The health program Zeitner was enrolled in only covered the cost of abortions in limited circumstances, such as when the woman's life is in danger. But investigators say that doctors later found out that Zeitner had no signs of cancer, and a doctor said that he never even treated her, even though she said that he did.
So basically, this woman, Zeitner, she claimed that she had cancer when she went to her OB and said, I need an abortion. She gave a letter and these forged medical records essentially showing that she had cancer. She needed to get this abortion. The doctor went ahead and completed the abortion, charged Access for it because Access does allow abortions to be had in cases where the woman's life is in danger. And everything went through, like you heard in the sound. There were some questions, and she ended up being convicted of insurance fraud and several other things. Essentially, it's insurance fraud for lying to get access to pay for this. So she went ahead and appealed this all the way up to the Arizona Supreme Court and said, hey, look, you used what I told my doctor. Because typically, whatever you tell your doctor, whatever you tell your priest, those are two exceptions that information can never come out in court. So the doctor can't disclose information you've given to them if it has to do with your condition and it's for treatment. Just like a priest can't say anything that you told them in confession. There's exceptions. Those don't come in. Well, the Arizona Supreme Court said, guess what? Your information you gave to the doctor does come in here because it has to do with fraud on the state or fraud against the access system.
Did this really happen all the way back in 2010?
Yes. Investigators say the scheme was discovered a year after the April 2010 abortion.
So she was sentenced to 10 years in prison. I'm assuming since she's been appealing throughout all of this, she's not behind bars right now.
You know, I don't know the answer to that.
But it's interesting to me that this happened back in 2010, and we're in 2019 now. Had she just dropped the appeals and went to prison, she'd probably already be out, or at the latest, she'd be out a year from now.
Yeah. I mean, this is just a perfect example of how slow our judicial system acts. Because if this happened in 2010 and just now our Supreme Court said, yep, the conviction stands, that is 9 years later. And it's not that complicated of a case.
You're listening to the Big Four at Four.
The Big Four at Four. Big Story Four.
They're ruling in the Beltway sniper case, that case that terrorized the Washington, D.C. area for so many months. The young man convicted in connection with that case, Lee Boyd Malvo, is apparently going to get resentenced, or at least the Supreme Court is going to hear whether he should be.
The Supreme Court's going to hear whether he should be.
So Lee Boyd Malvo was 17 when he was sentenced for what I knew as the D.C. sniper case. Some people call it the Beltway sniper case. He's 34 years old now, and this is one of the first criminal cases that really stands out to me. I remember people in the northeast part of the country would not get gas, or they would run outside, turn the pump on, run back into their car. This had that part of the country gripped with terror. And now Lee Boyd Malvo has went to the Supreme Court, and he's asked them to consider whether he deserves a new sentencing, since because he wasn't 18 at the time and he was sentenced to life behind bars. Is that unconstitutional?
Yeah, cruel and unusual punishment to take someone who is 17, who technically is not an adult, may not have the mental capacity that an adult would have, unable to make the same types of sane and rational decisions that adults do. Would it be cruel and unusual to keep them behind bars for the rest of their lives? And this is a changing and emerging and dynamic area of the law, because we're dealing with juveniles and we're dealing with various levels of crime. So a lot of people are looking at, do we need to change how we treat juveniles? And where is the tipping point? Where is that line where we can send someone to prison for the rest of their lives or sentence them to death? And when can't we? And that this is a case that is a perfect example. It was a horrible, horrible offense, things that were happening. And this was a 17-year-old that was also acting in connection with an adult.
I always think about the story here in Arizona. I'm trying to remember. Was it an 8-year-old?
Yeah.
Up in St. John's?
Yeah.
And that young man is not in the judicial system at all at this point.
He shot his dad.
His dad and like a roommate, I believe, and is not behind bars anymore. I'm guessing he still has to go through some counseling. But I know that when he turns 18, he is, you know, just totally on his own, I believe. This case, though, very interesting because, I mean, to me, we're talking 17, 18. That's not a big difference to me. I understand in the eyes of the law, it is a huge difference. And I'd be fine if they want to give Mr. Malvo appeals, as long as they're turned down every time. And I understand with this case, there was another master manipulator behind the scenes who was responsible and who was, many people say, brainwashing this young man, but it doesn't make what he did right. And to me, you still pay for your crimes. And it doesn't mean that when you're, you know, 40, he should get to get out. But sure, if he wants to sit before a board and get an appeal, okay.
So back in 2003, the jury decided against the death penalty, and that's when it was recommended for a life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. Since then, the Supreme Court has changed how it thinks and treats juvenile murders, and it said the death penalty was off limits for juveniles. In 2012, it said that mandatory life sentences without the possibility of parole were unconstitutional for those under 18. So you can see how society and the court has changed. And, you know, I don't know. If I was a family of one of the victims, mm-hmm. I'd say, oh, no, he should never get out.
Well, and he might, just because he gets a parole hearing doesn't mean he would get out.
That's right. So maybe we do give him the possibility of parole so that it's constitutional. But then hopefully those board members say no, because you were 17, you weren't 14. And at 17, you know right from wrong. I don't care who was telling you this was OK. You knew deep down this was wrong.
Let's recap. Story number one in the Big Four at four, the Sun Devils go dancing for a second year in a row. Big story two, the 1 year anniversary of the self-driving Uber crash. You just heard big story three a moment ago, the woman who faked cancer to get an abortion. And big story four, the Supreme Court's going to consider whether Beltway sniper Lee Boyd Malvo deserves a new sentencing. You've been listening to the Big Four at four.
The Big 4 at 4 with Mac and Gatos. Get the Big 4 at 4 delivered to your phone. Subscribe to the Mac and Gatos podcast on Google Music or the Apple Podcast app.